I guess, and I asked this question of Alan a few moments ago, and I'll ask you, of do you think, given the history that you have written and that you explore, that especially with what happened on Friday, yet another reminder, will this always be a debate in this country?
Well, we've had a debate over guns and gun control since the founding. You know, we think of gun control as a modern 20th century invention, but the truth is the founding fathers had gun control laws. The Wild West, the very heart of America's gun culture, had the most restrictive gun control laws in the nation. So gun control is as much a part of the story of guns in America as the Second Amendment and the six shooter. But that side of the story has sort of been lost over the last 30 or 40 years with the rise of the modern gun rights movement, and it's become sort of the view that gun control laws are an illegitimate infringement of the right to bear arms. But I think nothing could be further from the truth.
So where are we then? I mean, we will always argue about this in some way, shape, or form.
Well, that's right. We're going to continue to argue about this, certainly in the current political environment, but I think there is hope in the long term for the gun debate in America. I think you've already mentioned on the show the Supreme Court's decision in 2008 saying individuals have a right to bear arms. One of the reasons why the gun control debate has spiraled out of control is that there are those on the left who really wish to get rid of all the guns, and a lot of those on the right who feel that that's a mortal threat to them and their way of life. And as long as the debate is whether we're going to have guns or not, the gun debate moves nowhere. So what we need to do is recognize that individuals do have the right to bear arms, and then come together and try to figure out what kinds of laws we can put in place to protect that right while at the same time preserving public safety.
When it comes to that public safety, the question that we're really asking this morning is, do you believe that a stricter control of firearms could have prevented what happened on Friday morning? And the fact that these guns were purchased legally is one thing, but the opposition will often say those who are against strict gun control laws would say, look, it's not the guns, it's the people. So how do we come to balance that?
Well, I'm not sure that there's any gun control law that's going to stop a madman from killing people, especially one like the Aurora shooter who had no criminal background, no adjudicated history of mental illness. Norway has much stricter gun control laws than the United States, and last year witnessed a horrible massacre in which 69 people were fatally shot. What we should do is try to figure out what types of laws will limit the criminal use of guns more generally. You know, 12 people died in Aurora, a terrible tragedy and disaster. But since that day, there have been approximately 80 people every day dying from gunshot wounds in America. So we can't stop the madmen like James Holmes, but there are things we can do to make it harder for criminals to gain access to guns and to kill people as they do, unfortunately, every day in America.
When
one of the things we could do is we could require, for instance, a background check every time a gun is sold. Today, 40% of lawful gun sales do not involve background checks. So there are things that we can do to prevent or reduce gun violence, but there's probably not a lot we can do to stop a madman like James Holmes.
If you have something, and I read, and I don't know the truth of this, you know, as statistics come out or as details come out of the shooting, that he purchased 6,000 rounds of ammunition. Does that not set up red flags somewhere?
Well, anyone who does any recreational shooting would think that the 6,000 number is actually not so crazy. So earlier this week, I took a group of my students as part of a public interest fundraiser to a gun range where we shot guns, some of them for the first time. That evening, we bought 500 rounds of ammunition and used them all. If you go to a gun range, you're going to fire your gun about 100 times probably. So the fact that someone over the course of 4 or 5 months might buy 6,000 rounds of ammunition, if you're a recreational shooter, you're probably going to shoot that. It's not absurd.
Adam Winkler is our guest. He is professor of constitutional law at the University of California. He is author of the book Gunfight, and we welcome your phone calls this morning, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551. So when it comes down to, and this is the interesting thing that you bring out in the book is that there is a possibility of coming up with a balance, that this individual right to possess guns and a belief in gun control, that we can have the proper balance.
That's right. I think over the past 30 years, extremists on both sides of the aisle have dominated the gun debate with simplistic slogans and unreasonable positions. Gun rights hardliners view all gun control proposals as an infringement of the Second Amendment, and gun control zealots support any regulation of firearms, no matter how predictably ineffective the law will be. And so the two sides draw different conclusions, but they start in some ways with the same premise, that we can't have both gun control and the right to bear arms. I try to argue in my book, Gunfight, that a more balanced understanding of the right to bear arms has prevailed over the course of American history, that we've balanced gun rights with public safety, and we need to recapture that idea and reestablish a sense of dialogue and balance to the gun debate.
So there was a point in American history, in your opinion, that we had it right.
Well, I don't know if we've ever quite had it right. You know, we're always seeking better solutions. But the truth is we have in the past been able to balance gun rights with public safety in a way that ensured that people had guns for personal self-defense. But today it seems like we can't even do pass laws that, for instance, require background checks for every gun purchase. We can't manage to get a law passed that takes people on the terrorist watch list and bars them from buying firearms. We're just so stalemated in America right now because the two sides mistrust each other so much.
What role does technology play in this, in the sense of our changing gun laws and our changing culture of guns that are able to do more powerful things? And with that, a system that would be able to track who is buying what, where, why, and how.
Well, there's no doubt that there's lots of ways we could use technology to help us prevent the most dangerous people from getting access to the most dangerous guns. We already have a current background check system, but it's riddled with holes and only captures about 60% of lawful gun sales. Not illegal gun sales, 60% of lawful. So 40% of one's gun sales that are totally legal are happening without background checks. There's ways that we could devise technology so that every gun sale should go through a background check with a simple, easy process, but we just don't seem to have the political will to make use of that technology.
Adam Winkler is our guest. The name of the book is Gunfight. We will continue the conversation and include your phone calls after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences, offering undergraduate and graduate programs in a range of health-related fields. acphs.edu. Fly Fish the Deerfield, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, guided fly fishing tours on the Deerfield River, Western-style float trips, wade fishing, all skill levels, flyfishthedeerfield.com. Boyden & Perron, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperron.com. And Isn't It Sweet, Albany, soft-serve ice cream cakes, chocolate-dipped strawberries, and handmade chocolates, open weeknights until 8, Saturdays until 6, and Sundays until 5. 518-489-9820.
Adam Winkler is our guest on the program this morning, professor of constitutional law at the University of California, a columnist for the Daily Beast. He lives in Los Angeles, and his book is Gunfight, published by Norton. We welcome your telephone calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551. We go to Matt in New Paltz. Matt, go ahead.
How you doing? I just want to take issue with what Alan said about how firearms by owned by lawful citizens aren't used for self-defense that much. Back in 2007, I don't know if anybody remembers this, it was barely in the news, a woman in a church in Colorado, actually, it was a mega church, a man walked in there with an assault rifle, heavily armed, just like this gentleman in Aurora did, started shooting people indiscriminately, and she actually had a gun on her. She brought a gun to church, believe it or not, and she shot and killed the man before he was able to kill 30, 40 people. She had a semi-automatic Glock handgun, and she engaged the the man, the threat. As everybody was running away, she ran towards him,
right,
and shot him down. So just last week, a 71-year-old man shot two guys who walked into an internet cafe with guns. So, you know, people who break the law, they're always going to do this. They're always going to, you know, these lawbreakers. I mean, you can't regulate guns and expect people who want to commit mass evil not to get them. I mean, it's like regulating drugs. I mean, how easy is it to get drugs? It's easier to get a dime bag of coke right now than it is to get a gun, actually.
Adam, it is making an interesting, Matt's making an interesting point in that I heard in the coverage over the weekend several victims saying that they wish that they had a firearm with them, that they were allowed to bring a firearm because the situation could have been taken care of very simply.
Well, it's a complicated situation. There are examples of people effectively using firearms to stop shooters, potentially even mass shooters, like the we saw in Aurora. I mean, one thing we have to balance that with is the sense that is someone going to stand up in a dark theater and begin a shootout with a mass killer? In this particular instance, it probably wouldn't have been that effective. Apparently, the killer was wearing a lot of protective gear, right, ballistic helmet, protectors for his throat and for his legs. So he was prepared to be shot at and to be able to survive such a shot. Sometimes we think about, do we want guns on campus, for instance? If a shooter comes, we want someone to be able to defend us. But I think the idea of a shootout in my classroom sounds like a pretty bad idea. So I don't know. It is a complicated situation. I don't think there's any easy solution. Sometimes guns are used effectively for self-defense in these situations. I don't know to what extent we really wish to encourage people who aren't necessarily well-trained to start firing in a crowded theater that is chaotic.
Let's go back to the phones. Go to Sarah in Ulster County. Sarah, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. I have several thoughts. I'm just going to go back a little history, which is that, you know, essentially the right to bear arms is an ancient law that was put into place when the U.S. was trying to break free from the British. Early in our history, when we never, you know, made other laws different than that, Canada saw what was happening in the U.S. and made very strict gun laws. They only have about 8 deaths per year by handgun, whereas the U.S. has about 10,000 deaths per year by handgun. I can't imagine why a president wouldn't sign into law the inability for anybody other than the military to have a gun that is an automatic weapon. What use does a person in private life have for that type of weapon? I understand that people want to hunt, and people want to use guns for sport, you know, when they go to shooting ranges, et cetera. But there has to be stricter laws. The few instances where a public person is going to defend using their own handgun are extremely rare. And the fact that many people have a gun in their homes, you know, gives them access to, when they're in the height of an argument or something, to shoot and kill somebody, or a child to have an accident and accidentally shoot and kill somebody, which has happened many times.
Sarah's making a point. Yeah. I'm going to just stop you there for a second,
yeah,
Sarah. But, you know, Sarah makes an interesting point, Adam, in that I heard this a lot over the weekend, and it was certainly something on the Sunday morning talk shows as well, that this point is brought up an awful lot of what does the average citizen need with an automatic weapon?
Well, we should be clear that the sale of automatic weapons is illegal in the United States. Okay, so for almost 30 years, it's been against federal law for you to manufacture and sell a new automatic weapon. The assault rifle that was used in the Aurora shootings and that are popular among shooters in America, like the AR-15, it's called a semi-automatic. It is not an automatic. The automatic firearm is like a machine gun where you pull the trigger once and it continuously fires. That's not how a semi-automatic works. A semi-automatic works slightly differently in terms of its technology from a revolver, but very similar in that every shot you fire, you need to pull the trigger independently. So part of the problem with the gun debate I think we have today is that there's great misunderstandings about the nature of guns and what kinds of guns are being adopted. I think when the assault weapons ban passed originally, people said, good, we're going to get rid of these machine guns, when in truth machine guns, the sale of new machine guns was already prohibited to civilians. So people don't need automatic weapons, and indeed we've already decided in this country that they shouldn't have access to automatic weapons.
Do they need semi-automatic weapons?
Well, that's a more difficult question, I think, in part because about 70% of all handguns that are sold are semi-automatic. Virtually every police officer carries a semi-automatic firearm on his hip or her hip, and recreational shooters often use semi-automatic. Remember, a semi-automatic, it deals with a technology, but just like a revolver, if you want to shoot six rounds, you need to pull the trigger six times. You don't pull the trigger a lot less quickly with a revolver than you do with a Glock. So as a result, I don't see that there's going to be a great public policy benefit from necessarily from limiting semi-automatics.
Go back to the phones. Go to Pat in East Longmeadow, Massachusetts. Pat, good morning and welcome to the conversation.
Good morning. It seems to me that most of the people who've been involved in these shooting incidences, I've never read where one was a great fisher and hunter and fisherman, and that the people that are getting guns for those purposes, for sporting use, they're not the problem. The problem is people buying guns that are designed to kill people. AR-15 is not designed for hunting. It's designed to kill people. It's a military weapon. And then you have to deal with the absurdity of a person like Newt Gingrich on the talk show this weekend, who said that, well, that's not an automatic weapon. Well, technically, that AR-15 is not an automatic weapon because it doesn't have an automatic switch on it, and it doesn't. When you buy them now, you're limited with the amount of rounds you can hold in the magazine. But then you could just buy pre-banned magazines and use them in the weapon. So an assault rifle is an assault rifle. Just because it doesn't fit the federal definition of an assault rifle under the law doesn't make it any less dangerous. It's still designed to kill people.
Is that such a thing, Adam, of the design of what the intent of the weapon is?
Well, I would say that of the 280 million guns in America, right, there are about that many in circulation, probably 280 million of them were designed to kill people. I mean, that's what firearms are designed to do. Firearms are generally held by people not for hunting and target shooting purposes, but for self-defense. And that's why the Supreme Court said there was a constitutional right, that you have a right to protect your own personal liberty from being invaded by some criminal by use of a firearm. And while it's true that those guns are misused, and that's what we've seen happen in Aurora, and we see it happen every day in our cities with gangs and other killers, at the same time, we should recognize that every year, about 279 of the 280 million, maybe even a little bit more than that, are never used for any criminal misuse, are never used against a spouse, or don't cause any accidents. So I just think that we need to approach it with a very rational mind, think for it thoughtfully, and recognize that given the number of guns already on the streets, the desire to do things like limit assault weapons, while maybe well-intentioned and may have some good effects, overall their effect is not going to be that great because there are so many guns already out there.
Let's go to Jackie in Kingston. Jackie, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. My main question was about the assault rifles, which we're obviously going into a lot of detail about because it's so shocking that that is a legal purchase. But my other question was, my husband and I are watching the coverage of this all weekend, and then we changed the channel to, I don't know if the show's on the Discovery Channel or the National Geographic Channel, but shows like Sons of Guns, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but
yeah.
It almost glorifies the use of guns and these, these weapons, and do you think they have any impact on, not necessarily gun control, but the purpose and the use of guns amongst youth and younger people in America?
What is the state of the gun culture, in your opinion, Adam?
Well, we do have a very strong gun culture in America. It's probably going to be manifest in the next generation, too, although not because of hunting, which is really on the downward slide, but because of first-person shooter games, which are very, very popular form of video games.
Right.
So people are still devising the new ways to breed a love of firearms, and I don't expect America's gun culture is going to die down anytime soon.
Adam Winkler is the author of the book Gunfight. It is published by Norton. He's also a professor of constitutional law at the University of California. Adam, I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning and taking our call at the last minute and also speaking with our listeners. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.